So it makes a big difference. And sometimes we miss the point. We think that when something is dressed with specific words, it means something. But when Jesus talks, Jesus would never hurt anyone. Even if it was a cultural thing, he would never insult anyone. He gave his life for everyone. So he wouldn't do this to a poor woman. But what I'm trying to say is that there was a reason that we might not understand it, but we have to understand the love, because God is love, there is nothing else, within these words. And I think that even to the things that they look insulting, there is love. And when he called her a dog, it might, actually he called her a puppy. Kinaria means little dogs, which means puppies. So the puppies don't even understand. They just follow whatever they think will give her milk or something. So it's not an insult. It's to say that, look at this woman, she's not even faithful, and she follows me as if I am the mother of the dog, and she is the puppy. And you, the apostles, do you have the same dedication? Do you have the same love? Do you leave yourselves in my hands the way that a puppy would trust his mother?
I mean, to hear you say that, there's no doubt of the love. And I have no doubt of the love that Jesus has towards everything. It's just that when people translate the Bible, they put words that perhaps don't truly reflect Jesus. I don't know. But just plainly reading that verse makes me stop and think.
Yeah, the word is little dogs. That's what it is. But Jesus would never insult anyone. If we have this in mind, then we can try and understand what is he trying to tell us.
So what was the spiritual message in that? Humility on the woman's part? Or
yes.
God is sending the message to the Gentiles?
There are lots of explanations on every single word of the gospel of the New Testament. Now, all that you said is correct, but at the same time, there might be a point in your life that you will understand something different, and this will be God telling you personally something different. So I can't give you this answer, because when the time comes, if God allows, he will tell you something which will be specifically for you. And you will understand in the way that St. Anthony the Great heard the gospel, which said, sell everything and follow me. And he literally did it, and he became the father of the desert. So the gospel is Jesus talking to us, and he talks to us in a very specific way. So I can't give you the answer that you want. The gospel can give you the answer that you want. I'm just telling you to see things in a more open mind. That's all I'm telling you.
Yeah. This is from what you mentioned before. How can we purify our conscience to understand when God speaks to us and when he's sending messages to us, for example, through our lives?
How do you purify your conscience? How do you keep your house clean? You have to clean it, right? If you don't clean it, it's not clean. So we purify our conscience by trusting ourselves in God's hands and having a spiritual father, being an open book, not being afraid of who we are, not being afraid of our weaknesses, not been embarrassed of our weaknesses. There is no one who's perfect, and there is nothing that God doesn't know. So it's it's pointless to try and give a picture to people that it's not right. It doesn't do anything. And I'm not saying to create problems, but what I'm saying is that at least with our spiritual father, we have to be honest. And whatever we think that we did which was wrong, while it's still small, to get it out there, get it out of the way, because the dust does not come all at once. I mean, it does when you leave the door open and it's windy, but usually it piles up little by little, and then you put your finger like that and it's black, and then your conscience is not clean. So whatever you think that bothers you a little bit, get it out of the way, because if you don't, then more and more and more will not worry you, and then your conscience is like a sponge that you dipped into paint and it dried out, and it can't absorb God's love anymore, because you will be full of yourself. So it's a process, and the more you take care of your conscience, the more you will realize what you have to take care of and what you have to fix. But at the same time, we have to watch, because sometimes the tempter might make us hypersensitive. And if we are hypersensitive, we might think that, oh, I've done this wrong, I've done the other wrong. Even if you do the wisest thing on earth in front of God, is rubbish. So don't worry about that. Just make sure that you do your best. Don't worry about the results. Don't worry about how terrible you might be. Not that you are, but I'm just saying. And that's it. Just be honest. But it's a process. It doesn't happen overnight. You can sharpen your conscience and you can make it blunt. It's up to you. But the cleaner your conscience is, the more you will see yourself that you're not worthy of God's love. And the more you will appreciate everything that God has given you. That's why the saints, they were thinking that they are the greatest sinners. And they were right in the way they would see it. Not because they were, but because they knew how great God is. They knew that they haven't done enough. They knew that they were benefited in so many ways. And still, they haven't done what they could probably have done. And at the same time, they could have communion with God, talk to God and tell him, I want this, and God will listen. So they were saints, but still they were feeling that they were not enough. Make sense? Yeah. It's very important to keep our conscience clean. If we don't keep our conscience clean, our judgment becomes foggy, and then we take decisions that we shouldn't. We make decisions that we shouldn't, and then we will find ourselves in dead ends, and it's not nice. We can avoid it. We can avoid it. God will always be there for us, but we can avoid mistakes. Like, if you can avoid a parenthesis in your life that could maybe last 10 years, why wouldn't you? Why would you waste 10 years of your life for a mistake? Or for a wrong decision or whatever. There is no reason. Time never comes back. And our goal is eternity. It's not making mistakes and trying to fix them. So that's why Yerdes Milenos always used to say to me, from now on, don't waste any time. Something like this, like, every second that passes will never come back. If we can use it to keep our mind in God, or to do something to help others, or to do something useful for the humanity, do it. It will never come back. It will never make you holier if you waste it. It will never make your conscience better if you ignore it. So whatever you can do, do it. Of course, there is confession. You go for confession. You get a free pass again, and that's it. But we are wasting our time, and makes a difference. makes a difference? Why do you think, like, St. Basil the Great passed away so young? Because he fulfilled what he had to do on this planet. It's not a blessing to live 100 years. It means that for 100 years you were not ready to go to the eternity. And you had to wait and wait and wait and waste your time here and there. If you were ready, you would have gone straight away. I'm not saying anything, but yeah. Make sense? All right. Anyone else?
I was thinking, why is Jesus always painted somewhere in his 50s as very mature and very old instead of the age he was, which was 30? But that's a totally unspiritual question. But the question I wanted to ask you was, I can't control the first thought that comes into my mind. It just comes. How do I control acting on that thought for the second time?
What do you mean acting on that thought?
The thought comes, go and open the window, say, and I don't want to go and open the window. Or go and watch television, or go and eat, or go and do something that perhaps isn't right for me. How do I stop those thoughts? In your talk in Vigilance number 4, you said to remove all thoughts from your mind, whether they're bad thoughts or whether they are good thoughts. And then I was thinking, where would that leave me if I can't have any thoughts at all?
That would be very wise. No thoughts at all. All right. First of all, our thoughts is not like you press a button and they disappear, like you switch on the light and they disappear. Of course, when God appears, they will disappear. It's like switching on the light, but this doesn't happen every day. So what do we do with our thoughts? What we said that we're doing with our thoughts is ignoring them. And the more you ignore them, the more power your vigilance gets, and the more experience you get how to ignore them more. This doesn't mean to ignore the thoughts that they are related with your job, because you will be fired. This means that you ignore the thoughts that they're annoying. Like, it's not even only during prayer. You might be at work and someone annoys you. You have to ignore this thought. If you don't ignore this thought, and if you cultivate this thought, you will be upset with this person. You will go and gossip this person. You can even talk back and create a very bad relationship, which then you will have to face every day. And the story goes on. But if you had a bit of nipsey, a bit of vigilance, when you got attacked with him or her saying something not nice, if you were to just stop the thought there, or even use a positive thought that who knows what happens in this person's life and why they are hurt or whatever they are, and they can't behave in a different way, to avoid having extra thoughts on that, then you saved yourself from more trouble. So it's not just while we pray. Sometimes it's also, you can be walking down the road and have a thought for someone that you see on the street. It could be a judgmental thought. It could be whatever thought. If you ignore the thought, you ignore the trouble that you would get into by following the process of thinking more and more and more about it. Does this answer your question?
Help you by either prayer or so that you don't keep on thinking about those thoughts?
Yes, vigilance is never by itself. It's combined with prayer, and if not with prayer, in extreme situations with other ways that we've talked about. Like, for example, if a thought is very strong and you can't get rid of it and you can't pray at the time, distract yourself and focus on this distraction, which could be, even if it's nighttime and you're outside, just count the stars, count up to 100, but focus there. If you focus there, you break the power of the thought by 50%, and after that you can reduce it even further with prayer. But sometimes we can't even pray about a temptation or a problem that we have. We need to use a distraction to get to break the power of this. Of this, it could be anger, it could be a passion, it could be anything. You need to use a distraction, and yourself will teach you what works better for you. Everyone is different. Any other questions?